Good evening. Welcome to this very special March 16th edition of the Dollar Bin. Today we have a great show lined up for you. We got a couple contests even. You'll just have to listen to the show to find out what they are. We're giving plenty of things away, including happiness and smiles. So welcome to this lovely segment show. We've got a couple guests for you, Adam and Sean, also with Terrence. But before we get to that, we'll have a word from one of our sponsors.
Why, thank you for that lovely intro.
Started up in 1979, Westfield Comics has been catering to the needs of comics fans for over three decades now with its online comic shop and two Madison retail stores. It prides itself on being the industry's premier purveyor of comic books and graphic novels, offering an experience online that both mimics and improves upon the local comic book store experience, and ensuring that every interaction with Westfield makes customers feel that they are part of something special and fun. Westfield Comics, a better comic shop, delivered. And don't forget, you can stop by Westfield Comics at their website, westfieldcomics.com. Hey kids, do you sit at home and think to yourself, golly gee, I wish there were some good comic books out there that I could read? Well, guess what? You're in luck, because there are. Hey, it's Adam.
And Sean.
And we're here to bring you good comics.
Have you ever thought to yourself, gosh darn it, this Batman's just too confusing. There's just gotta be an easier to read Batman out there. Well, you know what, kids? There is. It's Detective Comics, written by Scott Snyder and art by Jacques and Francesco Francavilla. It's easy to understand and beautiful. Enjoy!
Aliens, vampires, and gangsters, oh my! That's right, I'm talking about Turf by Jonathan Ross and Tommy Lee Edwards. Have you ever wondered, man, I really like vampires, but I don't get enough aliens in my books? Well, never fear, because with Turf, you've got vampires, aliens, and gangsters together at last. Don't forget, it's Tommy Lee Edwards, so you know it's good.
Have you ever sat down to read your Thor comic and just thought, gee whiz, I wish there was more blood in it? Then you should read Matt Fraction's Thor with the awesome art of Pascal Ferry. It's got blood in it.
Gee, Mom, I really enjoy the Orson Scott Card series Ender's Game and all the other books that went along with it. But I just want to know what happened before all that stuff. What happened in the Formic Wars? I just don't get it. Well, you're in luck, kid. The Formic Wars is now in comic form. It's a new series about the Ender's Game world by Orson Scott Card, coming out on Marvel Comics. It's the prequel to Ender's Game, and it could be in your hands today.
Uncle Scrooge! Uncle Scrooge! Uncle Scrooge! This comic's got everything. It's got diamonds! It's got coins! You'll pay for the whole comic, but you'll only read the edge.
Feudal Age Japan. There's a warrior who they say cannot be killed. More precisely, they say he can be killed, but he returns. In 5 Ronin, Wolverine, by Peter Milligan, and art by Tom Coker, you'll learn the story of this samurai and the secret behind his immortality. 5 Ronin, Wolverine. There'll be blood. And a pretty good story, too.
In a town where vampires, zombies, were-terriers, mummies, and brides of Frankenstein are real, you can read the story of one girl's journey to find herself. And maybe she finds someone else in the process. I, zombie.
Brian tested, Brian approved. That's right, even Brian Eisen likes his book. Surprise, surprise, The Little Depressed Boy. That's right, Little Depressed Boy. You may think, Little Depressed Boy, what a downer. Well, not this one. This even brings a smile to Brian Eisen's face. And if you can bring a smile to Brian's face, then you're doing something right. That's right, Little Depressed Boy. Image Comics. Check it out now.
Do you like stories about guns? Do you like fun, awesome, well-written, well-drawn comics? Are you not Ted Tarver? Then you'll enjoy The Six Gun by Colin Bunn and Brian Hurt on stands now.
You ever think to yourself, man, Anakin Skywalker sure is a pussy. How did he end up to be Darth Vader? Well, on the stands now, Star Wars, Darth Vader and the Lost Command. This may just explain it. I don't know yet. Sure seems like a pussy to me, but I'm sure he's getting there. Go back to the story of Anakin Skywalker. Shortly after, he loses his arms and legs and becomes the man we know as Darth Vader. He's still new to his position, and he's learning a lot. But the question is, when will he truly learn to hate? Now, that's something we have to look forward to, and I think it's going to be answered here. So I say, go pick up Star Wars Darth Vader and the Lost Command. We can learn with Darth Vader to hate together. Hey, have you recently watched Cinderella or Wizard of Oz and thought, man, I do love me some Cinderella and Dorothy. If only they could be in a comic together.
And in bikinis.
Slow down, Sean. They're not in bikinis the whole book. But in the times that they are, and in some of the times that there aren't, there is some hot girl-on-girl fighting action.
That sounds awesome!
So if you like Cinderella and Dorothy from Wizard of Oz, and you like guns and violence...
and bikinis.
Then Cinderella, Fables of Forever, is the book for you. Check out those covers!
I'm on board with Minority. Reading comics can help you feel free. Crack a book, it's so easy. Drop a comic knowledge with Minority.
All right, hey, what's up, everybody? This is Terrence, a.k.a. T. And I guess for this segment, I am Minority here with Adam.
Hey, we're
just hanging out. And I guess tonight or today or whenever the hell you're listening to this, we're going to talk about Storm. Because I really like Storm. I mean, she's a really cool character.
Obviously, you're a fan of the Storm. Why don't you tell us a little bit about why you're a fan of Storm?
Okay, well, I mean, I would guess to say that I started off basically kind of as an X-Men fan. I started reading comics heavily, of course, when, you know, in the 90s when the big boom was going on and Jim Lee was doing X-Men or whatever. And, you know, it just kind of struck me as kind of cool because she was this, like, really strong character. She's not really a backseat player. She's done everything from, you know, being worshipped as a goddess to being the leader of the X-Men. Powerless, which was cool. I went back and did some of the, I guess, quote unquote, historic reading when I started liking her in the X-Men and read a lot of the Paul Smith stuff when he was drawing her. Mostly, you know, let's be honest, most of the Punk Storm stuff, because Claremont now and forever will still be kind of unreadable for me. So most of it was me looking at pretty pictures. But yeah, she was totally my first like comic book crush. Because, I mean, if you think about it, she's essentially a model. Yeah. You know, like all the models back then were like coming straight out of Africa and stuff like that. So it was easy to project that onto her as a character. But she was a lot stronger than fucking dopey Naomi Campbell and Mon. So she was really cool. Like I just really liked her. And also something else about her is that she's one of the few to me, like one of those few weather powered characters that aren't just fucking lame.
I started out reading X-Men as well. Storm, I don't want to say that she never appealed to me as a character, but she's never really a character that I really sought out more about. So I don't know a lot about Storm other than some of the things that you just mentioned. And I know that you mentioned briefly, but your favorite iteration of Storm is the punk rock Storm. What is punk rock Storm from? Like, what era is that?
It's definitely from like the 80s. I think Claremont and Paul Smith were working on the book at the time. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to pretend to be a historian here, but at some point, I know she totally lost her powers. And then she ended up having to, I think she had to fight Callisto to become the leader of the Morlocks. She kicked the shit out of Callisto, Callisto powerless in a big knife fight that was just rad. That was one of like the standout things that in that book was that it was just a fucking like, it was like the knife fight and beat it, except they weren't dancing. They were just fucking each other up. So yeah, and like right after that, she went into the punk look, and she was, you know, powerless for a bit. And then at some point, I know she fought against Cyclops to be the leader of the X-Men and actually won. So she was powerless, rocking the punk look, and was the leader of the X-Men for a while. And I know I went back and dug up a bunch of that stuff, and I thought it was really cool.
It's a pretty obvious question, but what niche do you think that character fills in the Marvel Universe?
I mean, you're right. Yeah, it is kind of obvious, but I would go on record as saying that she's probably the premier. I mean, okay, up until recently, she was definitely the premier black character in Marvel, if you ask me. I mean, she was I know a lot of people would be tough to try to put together an idea of any black characters in Marvel without starting with Storm, especially during the 90s when, you know, X-Men cartoon was on TV. X-Men were getting a big, huge push again because of the Jim Lee stuff. You know, she fills that niche. She's also, like, actually African, you know? She's not, you know, what you would typically call African-American. She's like an African character. They go back and do a lot of kind of history with her being in Africa, growing up there, basically being a thief. So her and Gambit kind of have ties with, like, the Thieves Guild based upon that. I think that's actually when Gambit was introduced, it was kind of this big thing that kind of fell out of a story with Storm. And again, don't act like I'm a historian. I don't have the Library of Congress in my basement. So, but yeah, I mean, like, I know that's what it kind of poured out of. You know, again, she's just kind of a forefront character. She's been in every iteration of the X-Men in some way, shape, form, or fashion. And now, of course, she's married to Black Panther, which is, say what you want. I mean, you could go on record and say, well, they're the two only African characters that you can think of in Marvel, but I think they go together pretty well. They definitely have that king and queen thing going on.
You mentioned where you kind of got started, and you mentioned in the Claremont unreadability. But what's some of your favorite story arcs with Storm?
Okay, I mean, I would always say, if anybody asked me that, it would be the Punk era, where she's just kind of running around powerless. It was kind of a weird renaissance in a way for the character, mm-hmm. because she'd kind of been a sideline player for a bit. You know, I wouldn't even say a sideline player, but she was definitely, you know, Cyclops was in the driver's seat. When she went through that punk phase and fought Callisto and just kind of jumped out even for a mutant, you know what I mean? Like, you're on a team with a guy who has fucking claws that come out of his hands and a blue guy that teleports. So it made her, to me, stick out a little bit more with the rest of the characters, even just visually.
Yeah.
So, you know, I really just like that whole thing. And then there was it recently came out in hardcover a few years ago. It was called X-Men the Asgardian Wars. And she was very central to that as well. It had to do with, again, it's Claremont, so fucking, you know, I'm not going to be able to just, there's no short answer to it. But basically, it has to do with her, Loki, and the X-Men dealing with some weird Asgardian shit and him trying to trick her into taking some Asgardian powers. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's lovely to look at. Tough to read.
Have you read any of the, like, Ultimate Universe X-Men stuff?
Oh, I did. I followed Ultimate X-Men for about 40 or 50 issues. You know, it was pretty solid. I thought she was cool in that. I'll tell you where I did like her was, and this is just obscure tea now. there was this book called Mutant X, and it was, it was where Havoc went into basically this alternate dimension, like parallel dimension or whatever, and led this team of pseudo X-Men. And the character in that was Bloodstorm. Yeah. And what was cool about her was she was Storm and had all the powers, but she was also a vampire. So, like, apparently her and Dracula had hooked up, and he turned her. But she was really cool in that, very aggressive, kind of an asshole. And I liked her in that too. I thought that was kind of a really cool iteration of the character.
Who do you think who do you think draws the character the best?
Oh, God. I mean, Arthur Adams just jumps immediately to mind. He's one of my favorite artists, period. He could be drawing a box full of cat hair, and I'd love it. But he's one of my favorite artists to draw Storm. I love any artist that actually gives her even remotely ethnic features.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because a lot of people just J. Scott Campbell it and draw, you know, a white chick and then paint her black.
Yeah.
You know, that floats your boat, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I really like Arthur Adams' take on her. I really liked, you know, Dave Cockrum was the one who really introduced her to the world, basically. He designed the what's kind of commonly referred to as the hooker outfit. But I think her look was really cool at the time. There weren't any dark-skinned characters with white hair at the time, so she really just kind of popped off the page. Mm-hmm. And she looked like her power was to float on the wind, you know? So right. She definitely looked cool there. I hated the tinfoil fucking sweatpants suit that Jim Lee drew her in when they relaunched X-Men, that like silverish thing. And that's the other thing that I want to say. I have to get this on record. I hate when in a lot of the X-Men cartoons, pretty much all of them, they've always portrayed her as this, like, motherly, like, Oprah Winfrey character, like, mentor, you know what I mean? She's not quite like that. I mean, she's smart and she's aggressive and can hold her own, but it's also like, you know, come on, man, just don't do that. Don't turn her into the mother. Don't turn her into Den Mother, which is what they did with a lot of those cartoons. I guess another person that I really like the way they drew her, and this guy's stuff is very kind of polarizing, especially recently, yeah. Is Kari Andrews.
I knew you were going to say that.
It's kind of, yeah, you know, what are you going to do? It is polarizing, but I like his stuff. And he drew her pretty cool in that X-Men Xenogenesis miniseries that just wrapped up. Also, really good story. Storm's pretty awesome in it. But yeah, I think he may have taken the Mohawk to a, like, I don't know, just it's like on meth. It's pretty cool, but wow, it's functionally, it is ridiculous.
I don't even know what's going on in the world of Storm right now. I know, you know, she did the whole Wakanda thing, and now Black Panther's living in Hell's Kitchen. So what are we seeing with her?
I guess what's cool with that is that Storm is, and while I say I like her with other characters, mm-hmm. she is cool enough to stand on her own. She's getting, I mean, geez, recently, as far as I can tell, she's been getting some, you know, some play in X-Men. Now, that being said, I've pretty much only been reading that Xenogenesis miniseries. I think she's in Astonishing X-Men now, though, and has been kind of doing her thing there. I'm trying to think of what else has actually really gone on with her, and I'm drawing a blank. Honestly, I don't read many current X-Men books. I think part of... Part of why I like really like Storm is just because when I was younger, I really liked her.
Yeah.
It's not like I made a like huge point to read, you know, African or African-American characters. Mm-hmm. You know, when they stood out and they were cool, then I stuck with them. And that's kind of what I did with Storm. I might not pick up a monthly book with her in it, but I'll always check out whatever she's in.
Marvel does not have its fair share of African-American female characters.
Hell no, they don't.
DC's got a few.
Yeah.
If you were in, I got this question here about the popularity scale of the character, but a better question, I think, is how do you compare Storm to the other black female characters?
Again, I would go on record as saying that she's the most prominent, mm-hmm. Whether Marvel or DC. Period. I know this is kind of putting you on the spot, but can you think of a more prominent, think of a more prominent African or African-American character, period?
No. I mean,
as far as females go, no.
Even as far as males, I don't think. I think if I was asked that question, just said name somebody, it would be Storm, but it would be my go-to person.
Yeah, and it's the easy, she's definitely had the most exposure. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could argue that some people would say Blade there just because of the movies or whatnot, but I think that she's definitely kind of the face of being African or African-American and being a superhero. She's definitely at the forefront of that. As far as females go, she's definitely at the top. There's nobody else that even holds a candle to her as far as being recognizable. Mm. You know, I mean, and DC, like you said, has plenty of, well, I won't say plenty, but they certainly have a larger amount of female black characters in DC, but none of them are anywhere near as prominent as Storm is. Storm is part of the zeitgeist as much as X-Men is, I would say. If you tell people to start naming X-Men, I would think that Storm will probably be in the first five that they mention.
Yeah, of like the 3,000 that have existed.
Yeah, exactly. I think people would probably say Wolverine, Cyclops, some you might get Colossus, Nightcrawler, and then Storm would probably creep up right around that area. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know. Also, I hated Halle Berry as Storm, just to get that on record.
Did you?
Oh, my. Ugh. Ugh. I don't think Halle Berry is not nice to look at, don't get me wrong, but as Storm, she was... she was a fucking hate crime.
Do you have any cast that you would put in the place of Storm there?
Not really. If you'd have caught me late 90s, early 90s, I think Angela Bassett could have filled that role. I think she's got the look. You know, she's not young, and she wasn't even young then. But I think her features say regal. Her features say queen. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I guess probably what I would have said around that time. She was kind of hot then, too. Fuck it.
If the audience, the listeners out there, have any questions, feel free to leave us feedback in the comment section. Feel free to ask just chat a little about your feelings on the character Storm as well.
Absolutely. I'm always interested to hear what people think when it comes to minorities in comics. And you know, I wouldn't put myself out there like this if not. And again, I'm not, you know, if you have differing opinions, that's awesome, because I'm not going to pretend like I'm the spokesperson for minority characters. I don't have a name tag that says, "Hi, I'm T, and I represent." So yeah, I'm always interested in hearing what people have to say about these characters. Yeah, so like with every minority episode/segment, I'm going to be offering up a sketch card giveaway for anybody that comments about the subject matter or the topic. So anybody who comments, you will be entered into a hat. Your name will be thrown in a hat, random drawing, and I'll do a sketch card of a character of your choice.
Hey, thanks for your time, T.
Thank you, Adam. I always enjoy it.
It's Wednesday. You've got your speakers blasting, and you're listening to Trade Talk. That's right, Trade Talk with Adam and Sean, where we talk about recent trade paperbacks that we've read, graphic novels, collections, things like that, all dealing with comic books. Sean, why don't you tell us about that first trade you got on your stack there?
So whenever we went to New York Comic Con, Chris Schweitzer was introducing us to pretty much everybody there, and he introduced us to Jarrett Williams, who was sitting with the Oni Press table, and he gave me a copy of his book and signed it on one of the butts. But then I gave that book to Brian Eisen because I thought he would enjoy it because it's got wrestling. But then I saw it for sale somewhere, so I bought it, my own copy, because, you know, you have to support creators. I like getting free stuff, but also like supporting people. So I actually purchased it myself. So it's all about this young kid who wants to join this wrestling team. So this is the first kind of day, his first bout, first wrestling matches. And he's trying to prove himself to the other teammates. And at the very end, oh, wait, nope, I'm not going to tell you. The art is just full of life and action. Jarrett Williams does an excellent job just kind of using the small digest, kind of Scott Pilgrim-like kind of form, but really making it fun and a little bit more, I guess, likable. The characters are definitely more relatable and fun than Scott Pilgrim. The only reason I'm really comparing Scott Pilgrim to this is because it's like the same size, it's black and white, it's Oni. I mean, it's really completely different. Well, I guess, well, young man trying to prove himself. It does relate to Scott Pilgrim, but I enjoy it more. Throw that out there. And it's going to be a series, so this is the first of hopefully many. And if you enjoy wrestling and that whole kind of world, and if you love fast-paced action, you'll enjoy Super Pro KO.
Trade Talk!
So recently, I've been amassing my collection of Vertigo Crime, and actually reading them, because I have that whole New Year's resolution to read all my trades thing. I came across a few of these Vertigo Crimes at the annual Borderlands sale. He actually had them for like $7 or something, like the hardback. So not passing that up. I mean, these are $20 books. And I've been really interested in reading a lot of these. I kept seeing the a couple of them floating around a lot. The Bronx Kill by Peter Milligan, and also Filthy Rich. I kept seeing Filthy Rich over and over again by Brian Azzarello. While I was waiting for Noche Roja to come out, which is by Simon Oliver, and it's got the art by Jason Latour, local Charlotte artist. Maybe you've heard of him. Maybe you've heard him on the show. So yeah, so I jumped into the world of the Vertigo graphic mystery novels. Vertigo Crime, which is no more, unfortunately.
But I mean, there was one solicited in the latest preview.
I don't think there's any new ones. I think they're going to print the ones that they solicited and the ones that they've put out or that they've talked about. But I don't think there's going to be any new ones. That's at least what I've heard. Anyway, I was talking about, so these three books, they're all kind of the whole crime noir thing. Mm-hmm. I think the best one that I read was The Bronx Kill. I've heard other people say some good things about Bronx Kill, and that's the one by Peter Milligan. I've been really digging Peter Milligan's stuff over the last few years, and notice even recently I've been reading a lot of Peter Milligan's stuff. Bronx Kill is a story about a writer who kind of is avoiding his family, who has a past of police work, and he kind of didn't go into the family trade of being a policeman. Instead, he became a writer. And he kind of gets shunned a little for that. And this is a story about him trying to write his latest novel. And a bunch of weird shit happens around him. And you kind of learn how maybe it all ties together, maybe it doesn't. But it's a pretty good story. It also has a lot of sections of the book that he's writing, so you can kind of see parallels between the book that he's writing and some of the things that are happening in his life. And it's pretty cool. I really enjoyed it. It is tricky switching between the prose of the book that he's writing and the comics. It takes a little bit longer to read because your brain has to make that switch. But I think I enjoyed it the most of all of them. Noche Roja, I've heard on the forum, a lot of guys have said that they've really liked Noche Roja, and I did like it. I thought it started a little slow. I didn't really, I don't think I could have said that I liked the book until I got to about the last quarter, and I think the story really picked up at that point, and I enjoyed it. And I think in the long run, I did enjoy the book. I thought it was a good story. It just started out kind of slow, and not really slow as much as indifferent. I felt really indifferent about the beginning of the story, and I think the character's kind of indifferent about it too, so that may be why. It's been stated, I think the art is a little dark, and it's mainly the printing and the contrast of the printing. I think it was a little dark. It's almost like washed out, like whatever the opposite of washing out the art is what I think they did. They washed it out with darks, basically, instead of with white, like it usually happens. But, you know, all in all, I think the art was good. You can't see it. And I like Jason Latour. I like him as a writer, and I like him as an artist. And this was written by Simon Oliver, and that's Noche Roja. And the third one that I've read, I haven't read them all yet. I look forward to picking a couple. Somebody on the forum, I can't remember off the top of my head, had mentioned that he had read some of the other ones that he really liked, and he listed what he thought his best was. I look forward to going back and checking that out. Hopefully I can get it for less than $20, but if not, then so be it. The last one is Brian Azzarello's Filthy Rich. Now, this is actually the first one I read. I actually reviewed them in the opposite order of which I read them, and I think I probably like them in the opposite order. Filthy Rich isn't bad either. I probably like Noche Roja a little bit better than Filthy Rich. Filthy Rich is basically the story of a guy who's a football player who had a career-ending injury before he even played a single professional game. And he's like working at a car dealership, and he's just kind of a fuck-up because he's, you know, this really successful guy who made some bad decisions and got injured, and now he's like, you know, wishing that he was living the dream and all that shit. So he's kind of living in this life and that he doesn't feel he fits in, and just kind of looks down on the world a lot. But he gets caught up in this whole like crime noir thing with like a femme fatale and all that stuff. So it's a pretty cool story. And as far as noir goes, I think this is the closest to being an actual noir story, because it's got all the aspects of a real noir story, like the femme fatale, as well as the kind of like the anti-hero character, which are two things that, to really, for something to be considered noir, those are kind of things that you need to have. And this one is the closest to an actual noir story as any of them. Now, they're not, you know, they're not Vertigo noir, they're Vertigo crime. So that's completely okay. But this one's actually a pretty good noir story. And yeah, you know, now that I talk about it, it wasn't bad. You know, Filthy Rich was pretty good. Unlikable characters. And, you know, you're kind of rooting them on anyway. So that's strong right there, I guess.
Tree Talk!
So I've been sick for the past, like, month, seems like. So my lovely husband picked up my comics for me, and he brought one home that I didn't even know I was getting. Melvin the Monster, Volume 3. I think this is the final volume. I think there were only 9 issues of Melvin the Monster that came out. It was done by John Stanley, did the art and the writing. And it was done back in the mid to late 60s, and it's just a fun, innocent, lighthearted, fun comic. I mean, it really reminds me of Monsters and Addams Family, that whole, you know, monster craze in the 60s. This was really kind of exploiting that, I suppose. I mean, it's just all ages. It's appropriate for anybody. You can give it to a kid and they would enjoy it. You can give it to an old fogey like me, and it reminds me of my childhood when I was alive back in the 60s, when I was growing up in the 60s. It's just like the art is just great. Drawn a Quarterly puts it out, and it's got this kind of like washed out kind of sepia toned, like the, you know, the pages aren't white, they're a little kind of yellowed. I mean, it just really gives you the feel that you're actually sitting down and reading this old comic. I mean, I love the characters. You've got Melvin, of course. You've got Batty and Mummy. You've got his little girlfriend, who's not really his girlfriend, but kind of. You got the school marm, and Melvin's just being Melvin.
Trade Talk!
Recently, Well, not that recently. Sean and I got a chance to go to New York Comic Con. And while at New York Comic Con, we met a fellow by the name of GB Tran. I recently received the news that GB was not going to be able to make it to Heroes Con this year. He was supposed to be one of the Indie Island guests, and I was really looking forward to it. He was a really nice guy, and unfortunately, he's just not going to be able to make it. But hopefully, he'll be able to be there next year. Also, I'm pushing to get him at the in the Dollar Band Anthology next year. He was going to try to get in this year, but again, just doesn't really have the time right now. But GB recently put out a book, Vietnam America. It's basically the story about his family and their journey from Vietnam to America and where he is today in his life. So this is kind of a history of his family. It's a really personal book. You know, not as much about himself, though he does talk about himself, but about the generations before him. Just kind of what they went through. A lot of things happen in this book, and there's a lot of characters. It covers GB's family, his brothers and sisters, as well as him and his parents and their generation and their parents' parents' generation, his grandparents. And I don't think it goes further back than that, but I could be wrong. I'm not flipping through it at the moment. I do have it in my hands, though. I really, really enjoyed it. There's a lot of characters to keep track of, and it was really difficult to do it. I had to flip back and forth occasionally. However, the inside of the cover, front and back, has like little pictures of the members of his family with their names, you know, kind of has the cast so you can try to keep it straight. But between, you know, Vietnamese names not being something that are easily recognizable to me in my life, and also the cities and things like that in the areas of Vietnam, it was definitely a little hard to follow here and there, but not to the point where I didn't enjoy the story, not to the point where I didn't want to continue reading. A really cool thing happened by the time I got to like the last quarter of the book. By the time I started to get to the end, and it really started to pick up pace, and you know, you kind of start reaching this climax because it jumps back and forth and back and forth between time as it slowly builds up to the journey of what actually took them from Vietnam to America. You start to put the pieces together and you hit this point where all of a sudden it all clicks, you know? Like all of a sudden I knew every character of that family. I knew who everybody was. I knew what their stories were. I knew what was going on, and it was a really, really cool. Like it opened up a book that I was already enjoying into this whole other world of understanding for me, which helped me enjoy it even more. And that also led me to go back and kind of reread the first few chapters when I was getting to know these characters so that I could kind of have the perspective of the entire journey when I went back and read it. Now, I haven't even got to talk about the art, or I haven't even got to that part yet. And the art in this is incredible. And that's really what stood out to me at first when I met GB, because I hadn't read any of his stuff yet, but I was able to look at his art and it is incredible. And I even told him that, and he said, you know, I hope the story doesn't step down on you. And it didn't. And I really enjoyed the story. The art is beautiful. It's fully colored on the inside. It's just a really, really well put together book. And I think GB did a great, great job telling the story. I don't know anything really about Vietnam. I mean, I know a little bit about the Vietnam War and stuff like that. It goes into like the history of the pre-Vietnam War because, you know, like I said, it goes back generations. So you read this story and you read about these characters and you read about all the things that were going on in Vietnam, and you start to think to yourself, man, no wonder it was a Vietnam War, man. Maybe it was justified. And then it hits the part of the Vietnam War and you're like, oh my God, this is terrible. This isn't justified. This is terrible. And so it really runs you through a lot of emotions. You care a lot about these characters. You care a lot about where they're going and, you know, where they came from and how they got there. And, you know, I do look forward to reading this book again. I don't read a lot of books multiple times, but this is definitely one that I'll be reading again in the near future. And that, again, that's Vietnam America, and it's by GB Tran. It's in hardback, and it's just a very, very well done book. I recommend going to your comic shop or checking out a bookstore possibly and picking it up. It's well worth it, well worth it. And there's also a link that I put on the show here, and Sean's done it when she did a write-up about it, and it goes to this little video kind of that you can watch, and it shows a lot about the book and everything. Check that out. He's got a website, link to that as well, and give it a look.
Change up!
All right, so now we've come to the segment where Sean and I talk about the same book that we both read, and we kind of give our opinions. She's going to come from her side. I'm going to come from my side. We're going to see if we can meet in the middle,
But, you know, we may lock horns on the way. So the book that we're going to talk about here now is Aphrodisiac by Jim Rugg and Brian Maruca. So, again, this is Aphrodisiac, and let's watch the sparks fly. So, Sean, Aphrodisiac, what'd you think?
This is, I mean, it's a wonderful story about Aphrodisiac, and it kind of goes through his kind of superhero history, and there's a little bit of kind of blaxploitation kind of thrown in. But
now here's where I gotta cut you off here. Whoa. Because I don't agree. I think that Aphrodisiac is a wonderful story that is a blaxploitation that uses superhero tropes to tell the blaxploitation story.
But clearly it goes through the evolution of comics. It's not about the blaxploitation. It's about the evolution of superheroes.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard this argument before, but I've seen some blaxploitation. I've read some blaxploitation. And I'm going to tell you, I don't care if it was written by a white guy, if it was written by a black guy. This is a blaxploitation book that just happens to use a bunch of superhero analogies and little intros to try to, you know, convince you that it's a superhero book that is trying to, like, not really blaxploitation. But it is. And that's not a bad thing. It's a great book. But it's blaxploitation.
I mean, I'm not going to argue with you, but I am. It does have some blaxploitation. Yes, but, I mean, do you see the comic book covers? I mean, don't you feel the evolution of comics as it goes from the Silver Age into the 80s?
Yeah, but I mean, if you go back and you look at the evolution of blaxploitation, you can go back to the, you know, early 70s and you can see a lot of those things. And you actually, when you watch blaxploitation, you can see a lot of, you know, what you might consider comic book or superhero aspects to blaxploitation in general, let alone like a superhero story that happens to be using blaxploitation. Especially if you start to kind of walk up and you see things like later blaxploitation, you know, because you got the Dolomites and the early stuff. It's kind of superhero-y in its own way without the powers and all that. But then you kind of come up to things like I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker, which has got kind of a, I think it's got kind of a comic book action beat feel to it. As well as, of course, you get up to something like Meteor Man, which is obviously blaxploitation, and that's using superheroes and powers and things like that as well. I think just because something uses superheroes and things like that doesn't mean that it's not blaxploitation. I think this definitely fits into the blaxploitation genre.
I think that Aphrodisiac could be substituted for anything. They just happen to choose Aphrodisiac. It could be about a monster and its different evolution origin stories as told from, you know, the 60s, the 70s, and up through the 80s, and how the character is reinvented in each decade.
Yeah, and I can see that, and you know, it's obviously there, but I think if you watch something, if you look back and you watch something like, you know, Human Tornado or something like that, which is an old blaxploitation, and you look at that, you can see a lot of the similarities. Like, that movie has an overall theme to it. It may have, like, an overall story, but those movies are so disjointed. And that's one thing about Aphrodisiac is, sure, it's about all about Aphrodisiac, and he's got a lot of the same features as a character, but every single one of these stories is completely disjointed and has nothing to do with the one before, even though, you know, you might think that it's leading into something else, and then it doesn't. It's a lot like watching a Rudy Ray Moore movie, in my opinion. That's kind of how I saw it when I was reading it.
I think we're just going to have to agree to disagree that I think this is a superhero comic that uses blaxploitation.
Well, I think,
and you think this is a blaxploitation that uses superhero comics.
Aphrodisiac is a bad motherfucker. He's a pimp. He's a ladies' man. He's got he obviously has got the power with the ladies. He's got the superpower there. Obviously, that makes him a superhero, and in my book, at least. And you know, he's a hard man to nail down. Oh yeah, Aphrodisiac is a great book, and it's a great blaxploitation story, and it's got great art. It's a great story, and it's told in fun chunks.
Turtle.
Welcome to Comic Dramatic Readings. Your players this evening are Adam and Sean. Like always, with Dollar Ben Comic Book Dramatic Readings, the first person to comment on the show, the exact book that this Dollar Ben reading's coming from, title and issue, can choose anyone of whom they have the address for the Dollar Ben to send a copy of that book to. So, listen, enjoy, and good luck.
He doesn't stop! He doesn't spare one of them!
Not a one! Before I can even catch my breath, there's a bunch of bleeding, burning heaps there are. And God help me, here I am. Thunderstruck in love with the man. The goddamn Batman.
Sleep tight, princess. And don't go messing again with any Gotham City girls.
Has anybody ever told you, my good man, that you are totally hot?
Not for the last few days, no.
Consider yourself told.
Her tongue's a little bit sandy. She's a smoker. Cigars. Cuban. I haven't kissed a smoker in weeks. Not since Selena.
We keep our masks on. It's better that way.
Need a ride home? In this rain, you'll freeze yourself to death on that Harley.
You've got a car? You're the goddamn Batman? You need yourself a goddamn car?
Sure I do. I'm not the one who can fly. Although that idiot doesn't even know he can fly. Batmobile, find me.
Batmobile?
Not one word. I've taken enough grief about calling my goddamn car the goddamn Batmobile. I'm the goddamn Batman and I can call my goddamn car whatever the hell I want to call it.
Whatever you say, man of mine, that's just totally queer name for a car is all. By the way, who is it that you'd be talking about who can fly?
Nobody. He's nothing. Never mind.
That's fair, I suppose. But do you think you could find it in your big old heart to tell me just who it is you're carrying on your shoulder right now?
He's cargo. Let's get you home. It's almost dawn. Sometimes I hate the sun.
You what? You know you're a fine man, Mr. Batman. A right hero you are. A hero, to be sure. To anybody with clear enough eyes to see straight. But here I am wandering. Should it ever cross your mind, if I may be so bold as to ask? Does it ever occur to you that perhaps you could find some wee benefit from speaking to a person or two now and then? Of course not, why you're so busy punching somebody senseless.
Shut up.
All I'm trying to say is that your perspective on things might find yourself a tad bit readjusted by the occasional conversation with somebody. Somebody you're not punching in the face, that is.
I'm doing fine, and you talk too damn much. Shut the hell up. Just what I need. Tough love from some crazy Irish chick.
I'm Irish?
I'd put her in from County Monaghan by that accent. Nice enough voice, but she's a cheeky one. Pushing her luck. Nuts to that. She's got a right to say whatever she wants. She's got the right. Thomas Jefferson and all that. And she's dead right to say I'm half crazy. But only half. The other half's doing just fine. Fine. Fine.
So hey guys, thanks for listening. This is Adam and Sean, and I guess we're signing out. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Sorry. Lucky Charms. Irish Springs.
Oh, jeez. You're a Dottie now. That means you're Irish.
Crap.
Thanks, guys, for listening. Next week, I think what we're going to have for you is we're going to talk a little bit about All-Star Superman, the book, the movie, things like that. We're going to go ahead and do a review of that. Maybe we'll be able to put together a Dollar Bin Theater, comic book theater, to throw into the, it's where we do the commentary about a movie, to throw into the member section. Don't forget, you can sign up for the member section. It's $20 a year. It gives you a lot of the cut stuff, as well as early access to interviews that I haven't yet posted, early unedited access to the interviews, and it helps support the Dollar Bin and kind of keep us moving. We've been doing this about 5 years now, and we're staying strong, but it doesn't get any easier. Again, thanks you guys for listening. Don't forget, westfieldcomics.com is a proud sponsor of the Dollar Bin. And you can go there and order comic books on the internet.
That's crazy talk. You can order comics on the internet?
You can at westfieldcomics.com.
Oh, sweet.
Thanks for listening.